everyone out there in listener land. This is episode 2 of Because I've Lost Control of My Life. I am your co-host, Matthew, and sitting here with me today is...
Hi, I'm Adam.
Oh, boy. We made it to episode 2. We made it to the big time.
We're going to be 100 times better this time.
One hopes. So how do you feel 1 week later?
I feel like we're going to do something that's even more fun, more funny. We're going to figure out what works and what is just dumb bullshit no one wants to listen to. And we might not figure it out today, but...
Well, it's like carving a statue. It's starting to look like something instead of just a jumble of rock.
We promise you it's coming. Good stuff. Good content.
We promise eventually there will be something good on this podcast. My eyes are burning from all of the editing I did on the first episode, trying to carve it into something interesting and entertaining. We'll see what the feedback says, I guess. So should we just jump to the first segment of tonight?
The second episode of season 1, the first short, Barbecue Story.
So... the way we're going to handle this from now on is we're going to do a summary and then talk about it so we don't jump around quite so much.
There's a barbecue. Tommy has a new ball that his grandpa gave him. It's his favorite toy. Angelica steals it and throws it over the fence. The babies decide to go get the ball, and they are soon terrorized by a disgusting dog. Spike saves the day.
So the first thing I got to point out about this episode was the intro. Actually, two aspects of the intro. I don't know if you noticed, but this is one of, I think, two segments only that has... Ba-ba! That music instead of the traditional intro.
Oh, yeah. It's a little shorter, at least.
Yeah, it doesn't have everything.
I didn't realize that. Glossed over it. I thought you were talking about the, like... little jungle music that starts with all the bugs in the grass.
That was going to be my second thing. But I guess I just pointed the episode title intro out first because it's something that I always noticed as a little kid. I wasn't an especially musically inclined kid, especially not at 4 or 5 when this came out. But it's really, really noticeable just because you watch Rugrats for years and you're used to the same thing and there's something different.
Yeah. I think I did notice it at some point, but I never like put it together as something special.
Yeah.
It's kind of like how there's some episodes of Gilligan's Island where instead of saying the professor and Ariane, they just say and the rest to save like seconds.
I'm actually curious now if this is shorter or if it's just different music, because it is in a different key.
I think it's also shorter. I think they did it to get a few more seconds into the episode that
you
they
might
didn't
be
want
right
to cut.
And I think this and the second segment of this episode, it's just these two that have that, to my knowledge.
Okay.
It could be another one of those things where early on in a series, things are just different between episodes, even animation. Like, not to jump to another show, but if you look at Doug, there's one episode where two of the segments have slightly different animation styles.
Are you thinking of, like, the costume party one?
Yes.
And I think that might be, like, the true pilot.
Okay, that makes sense. But anyway, the second intro thing I was talking about was the little jungle bit in the beginning. I love this music, by the way.
Yeah, it's good. And I do love that Tommy picks a beetle out of the grass and immediately gets to put it in his mouth. And if you freeze some of these frames, like, he looks so satisfied.
He's just so ready to eat this. It's like, I will eat this beetle.
And I think that there's a parallel with Tommy and the beetle with the story of him and the disgusting dog that wants to chew him apart.
At first, Tommy wants to eat the beetle, but upon almost being eaten by the big disgusting dog, he realized it's not so nice to eat something that's alive.
Yeah, this dog is so fucking evil and gross. It rips its doghouse out, like, it's nailed to the ground. He rips his doghouse out to eat this baby that just crawled into the yard.
Yeah.
just... This could be, if things went wrong, this would be the most gruesome episode.
Yeah, yeah. We talked about in the first episode the amount of times of the series where the babies almost die, and they definitely almost die in the first episode because a baby falling from the hoverama could potentially die or at least break bones. But this dog would probably have actually eaten Tommy. Like, they're saying,
"Please, Tommy, Tommy, please, Tommy, Tommy.
But it probably actually would have eaten him.
Yeah.
Oh man. And the audio of the dog, the audio of the dog bark, the audio of the dog barking is just so perfect. The.
That's pretty good. That was not a sample from the episode.
No, it was. Here, let me do this.
I love right after Tommy's about to eat this beetle and Dee Dee's like, "No, don't eat that," and he flicks it away. It lands on Drew and he starts like screaming,
"Get it off! Get it off! Get it off!"
And then he flicks it on the Spike and the beetle just crawls on top of his head. And Spike's just obliviously yeah, looking at the burgers, the turkey burgers.
Does it land on Grandpa Lou first?
It does, and Grandpa Lou does not really care that much.
It's the first time, the reason I bring that up is because I think it's the first time in the series where he says the number 15. Because he's talking to Grandpa Boris, and he says,
"And then we'd walk 15 miles in the snow to, dang nabbit!"
The very first 15.
Yeah, because I don't think he ever says it in the, I know he doesn't say it in the pilot, and I'm pretty sure he doesn't say it in Tommy's first birthday.
I'm a little iffy on that because I've been watching ahead, so I'm not quite as much as you, but I've heard him say 15 at least a dozen times.
Okay.
15 times.
At least 15 times.
I do like the little pan shot of everything Stu works with as he's seasoning his burgers.
I made a list. Because I mentioned in the first episode the food, the yuppie health food thing. There is tree bark bread, herbal flavor flakes, diet lemon.
That's my favorite.
Loose Bruce pine juice. Loose Bruce prune juice. In the magazine, it says tofu. It floats. Turkey burger. You'll gobble them. And then another thing on the table is Just Say No salt substitute, No Tears imitation onion, meatless marinade, fools them every time, that has a little note at the bottom that says, "Do not keep, no preservatives." It doesn't even say do not keep on refrigerator, it just says do not keep. There's a thing that says MSG with like an X through it, no salt, savory seaweed, unsweetened sugar, and American original.
One thing, I feel like they've got that no MSG salt, but yeah, they also have that savory seaweed, which I think is basically what MSG, MSG is.
Yeah, I think you're right. I love seaweed stuff. Like, I don't know how much of a fan you are of it, but...
yeah, it's good.
Yeah. Like, whether it be in sushi or, like, seaweed snacks or, like, soups that have seaweed in it.
It tastes kind of fishy.
Yeah, I really like it.
Yeah, it's good. I got some snacks recently that I like ate them all in one sitting because it's like zero
calories.
It's
like nothing. The best ones I ever had seaweed snacks are, there's this Thai market around the corner now, and they have these really long ones in this big bag. Like, you would get a bag of potato chips, and they're crispier. They're closer to a potato chip. And I guess that's because they're made with palm oil, so they're made with the suffering of orangutans. Yeah, so actually I never bought them again after that, but they were delicious. Something I really like is Stu's shot of the party with the doing his home movies.
And the scat.
Yeah. I can't remember if we made reference to it last week or whenever we were first planning doing the show, but in that pan shot, we see Chaz and we see the woman who I, as a little kid, thought was Chucky's mom.
And I still believe she's supposed to be Chucky's mom because I think as far as the first season goes, they did not plan to have Chucky's mom not in the picture.
Yeah.
They mentioned his mom several times throughout the season as if she's still presently living with Chaz. This is the first appearance of Chaz, too, and he doesn't speak at all.
Yeah.
In this. But Chaz, eventually, he's voiced by the same person who voices Drew, Michael Bell.
Oh, I didn't know.
And as I was going through the season, I noticed that whenever they have, like, small characters and stuff appear, it's generally Michael Bell, Drew Pickles' voice. He's really the guy they get to do funny voices that aren't regulars, it seems like. He'll be mentioned again in the next segment we do.
But yeah, I agree wholeheartedly with you. Chucky literally in episodes has said, my mom has done X, Y. I don't know exactly what he says, but he refers to her as if like she is alive and has recently done something for him, whether that be feed him, change him, whatever.
And there's an episode, it may be the robot episode, where Stu says that Chucky's mom and dad will pick him up in the morning.
Yes, 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 yes. You're right.
I'm still not done with season one, so I don't know if Chaz is ever officially introduced in the first season or not. As of yet, he is not.
He is in the first season. He is in the first season. I think he may be introduced with a voice in the football episode.
Oh, yes, yes. I think that's the next one that I have to watch.
I don't know, though.
Oh, I was just going to say that this episode isn't really heavy on the funny lines. It's more that funny stuff is more visual.
Yes, I agree.
This time, and contextual. There's a funny part when after Spike rescues Tommy and they come through the fence and Tommy gets smacked in the head by the board.
Yeah. Other sight gags, when they go to the next yard, there's a part where Phil opens up like a fireplace and gets covered with coal, and like the look on his face as he's like trying to get all this soot off of him. And then of course Chucky getting his head stuck in a log, like his legs poking out, like kicking
a hollow log in someone's yard. I like how when Angelica spikes the ball, it almost like kills a bird.
Forgot about that.
It's like, I think that's the first bird that isn't like part of Tommy's mobile.
Yeah.
In the series.
Yeah.
And so I was on the lookout for the first Rugrats bird.
But not the last. Missed that.
Not the last. There's going to be some good ones.
Good birds.
Some good birds in the episode that comes later that I consider the first standard Rugrats episode.
The one,
we'll get to that later.
The other segment of this episode, or?
Nope.
Okay, nope. Okay. Yep. So Angelica throws the ball into the next yard. One of the things, I think this is the first episode where we see Tommy's defiance, or bravery, or both, whichever way you want to put it. When Angelica's like, call me the prettiest princess, or whatever she's saying, and he's like, give me my ball! Like, there's no giving in at all to her. Like,
that's one side of Tommy. We see a completely different side of Tommy in the next episode. But the next segment. But, yeah, he will not give in. And so she does spike that ball over the fence.
Yeah.
And
the
next yard. We get another first from Tommy where he says,
a baby's gotta do what a baby's gotta do.
Whenever Chucky does not want to go.
The iconic line that if you see any of the old commercials, and they are in YouTube in various places, that's like the big trailer line. A baby's gotta do what a baby's gotta do. Even not just for Rugrats, but I think it may be in the commercials for the Nicktoons in general. I think.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It's really funny. His diaper slips. At that point, I forgot about that, and he looks all embarrassed. And Phil and Chucky look at each other afterwards, since his face is all red.
Yeah, so they eventually make it to the disgusting dog's yard.
With the help of the screwdriver and the kangaroo, stuffed kangaroo's pouch.
This is three episodes in a row with the screwdriver. I don't believe that we'll get to it. So they break out, they go to the disgusting dog's yard where his ball is.
Disgusting dog. That's a t-shirt right there.
Demon dog.
The horrible and, disgusting.
And when they get into the yard, Phil and Lil run away screaming. Chucky manages to get over the fence with Tommy's help. this dog is coming at Tommy, who starts to scream.
And the shot of him screaming.
Oh, yeah.
That may be my favorite shot in the entire series. Like, the close-up first on his round mouth with his little baby gums, pulling back at lightning speed all the way back to the yard of the barbecue.
And if you freeze frame, his little baby eyes are on top of the...
I didn't see that. I've never noticed that. I'm going to have to look it up now. That's crazy.
There's a lot of good freeze frames in this episode.
First season, in general, I feel like.
Especially with Stu. They really had fun animating Stu.
Yeah.
Anyway, Tommy's screaming. Spike, who's been trying to get one of these turkey burgers, they are left unattended, and he almost has a shot to get one, but he hears Tommy scream. He becomes a hero. He starts running, he gets caught in a tiki mask party favor. It plays some, like, parody 60s Batman theme as he is heading to the yard to save Tommy. He jumps over the fence, the other dog looks at him puzzled, and Spike goes,
hits his pulled house, knocks it over.
One of the funniest drawings is that disgusting dog scared.
When it's not even necessarily scared at first. When it first sees Spike in the mask, it just its jowly face looks confused and then becomes overcome with fear.
After he barks, he becomes overcome with fear and he runs back in his doghouse and flips over.
Also, can I say just how much I love that action music for Spike? I'm just going to call that Spike's action theme. Like, upon watching it again, when we first decided to do this a couple weeks ago, I was like, yeah, come on, Spike. So good.
And then there's like a more generic, like triumphant 80s music. I don't know if it's specifically parodying anything like the Spike action music was as he rides off with Tommy riding him like a horse.
Oh, something else I just thought about is when they're exploring the yard after they pull Chucky out of the log. Chucky goes for the first time in the series on his rant.
Oh, yeah.
Where he's like, first you take me out of into the next yard, then you leave me. Where's the ball, Tommy? Where? There. Like,
then they just ignore him. They're like, okay, Chucky.
That's a joke that they pull one or two times, maybe even three in this first season, where he goes into a rant like, where's such and such? There. Like, immediately afterward. Like, I really enjoy that. I don't think it ever comes up again, but... What's that?
Am I okay? I'm looking for the ball.
I was looking for the ball. When I was little, watching Rugrats, anytime Dee Dee was on screen, my mom said she had Triceratops horns for hair.
I always thought more clown hair.
That too.
So yeah, eventually... they get back to the yard.
With triumphant music playing.
And through all the commotion, after the parents noticed the babies were gone, just as Tommy was screaming, the burgers burned.
My burgers!
At the end, while Tommy's sitting there hugging Spike and very grateful to him.
Yeah.
And as he lets the beetle go, Stu brings over the plate burgers for Spike to eat.
Here you go, Spike, old boy. Burnt to a crisp, just like you like them.
But you mentioned at the beginning of the episode the sort of arc, mini arc that Tommy has. And I swear, I don't know that I ever necessarily picked up on that until watching it again for this. Tommy is initially going to eat the bug and then realizes maybe it's not so nice to eat something after he's almost mauled and eaten by the monster dog.
Yeah, he realizes you don't eat something like the first few seconds you see it.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of like mirroring and parallels in this that I missed as a kid.
Definitely.
Like the birthday episode, I do think he's smooching on the pen as his parents are doing it. And I don't know if I talked about that, but in that episode.
You did.
I mentioned that, but okay. I don't think I mentioned that. It might have been a commentary on them trying all these different things to get him to eat whenever he's more of an imitator.
Ah, okay. So like if they just ate that he would eat?
If they ate a little bit of the baby food or something, he might have eaten. Like he saw the dog food commercial, saw a dog eating the dog food. I mean, they gave him the idea that he would become a dog if he ate it, but he sees something eating it. He sees it as food. He wants to eat it.
Right. Well, is it Tommy's first birthday or a later episode? I think it's a later episode. They're trying to get him to eat, and Dee Dee has the bowl of food, and she's like, look how good it is, Tommy. And she, like, spoons it, and then just, like, dumps it. And it's obviously not going in her mouth, and she's like, nom, 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 nom.
I don't think it's that one. It might be the school one.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't remember. Tommy learns not to eat things the second he...
that are alive. All is well. Spike gets his burnt to a crisp burgers. Everyone sits on the hill, watches the 4th of July fireworks. And I really love that music right there. That, like, it's a show about babies, and babies sort of have a, I would imagine, like, a sense of wonder about the world. And the music, it to me, conveys, like, a sense of wonder, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
As it's pulling back and we see the whole, at first it's just behind the backyard watching it, and then we see the whole neighborhood with the fireworks. I think it's a very nice ending.
Yeah, I really like it. This episode, less funny, more nice, but
yeah.
you can find funny stuff in it.
Definitely.
Especially if you're like weirdos like us.
Mid-30s men watching Rugrats and hoping to get paid for it.
So, if you're ready, I have the first part of my secret segment.
Okay, so before we started to record, Adam said he has a secret segment for me. I have no idea what to expect, but audience, let's learn together.
Well, last week we had some discussion of the Rugrats theory, which is...
Oh, no.
which is Angelica... is actually the only child character. All the other characters are dead and figments of her imagination. It's really dumb, something somebody made up, and they, like...
On Tumblr.
And they put dumb things that aren't even evidence together to justify a creepy story they wanted to tell. My segment is sort of similar, where I take mistakes or inconsistencies with the series, and I make my dark Rugrats with it. And I call this...
Oh, God, you really got me when I start coughing. Okay, please continue.
I call this segment Rug Wraith.
Oh, jeez. Well, there's a t-shirt for the podcast.
This episode, being called Barbecue Story, I made my own Crypt Keeper take on it. And it's barbecue gory.
I'm so happy you did this.
The story progresses entirely as seen, but what you don't know is that because Stu burnt his burgers, Stu murders Chucky's mom to salvage his barbecue.
Is she the burgers?
She becomes the new burgers. After the burgers are burnt, and that's why Chucky's mom is never seen again, even though she's mentioned later. All those episodes happened before this barbecue.
Oh god, that's so good. I don't know if you could tell, I literally have tears in my eyes right now, so thank you for that. Oh fuck. Oh my god.
That's all I have for that segment. It's not an in-depth thing.
Yeah, but it's enough. It's enough.
It's made up lore. So that's why Chucky's mom isn't in the series.
So if you put that on Tumblr, you would probably get acknowledged by Arlene Klasky, like that dumb theory that we talked about last week. Oh shit. Okay, so the second segment for episode 2 is Waiter, There's a Baby in My Soup. Let's go right to the alternate segment, wherein they go to a restaurant and they're just served Tommy for dinner on the next episode of Rugrats.
Well, yeah, that is my second segment, Rugrats.
you actually did that later. Too. I'll cut Waiter. That and let you bring it up.
Waiter, I asked for a baby in my soup. And the plot of this one is Mr. Mucklehoney finally warms up to Stew after Tommy is presented to the table in a plate of spaghetti. He sees that Stew is willing to do anything to get ahead. And so he decides to invest in Pickle's toy.
How are we going to talk about the actual episode now?
This is the first dumb baby episode that we get.
Yes.
And this is the only season we get dumb baby episodes, so you got to cherish them while they're there. So in this episode, Stu has a meeting with an investor for Pickle's Toys, and their babysitter cancels, so they have to take Tommy to this dinner that they're going to. And Tommy causes all kinds of trouble after he sneaks off.
Chaos scene.
But the investor eventually... Yep, the chaos scene. And the investor eventually gives... Or is willing to invest in Pickle's Toys because he thinks that all of Tommy's mischief is a prank that Stu pulled. And that's the kind of moxie he likes or whatever.
Mr. Mucklehoney of Mucklehoney Industries.
Also voiced by Michael Bell. The first one-off character that they go to. And if you really pay attention, you'll hear Drew Pickle's voice everywhere in this show.
Yeah.
As a side character.
I wonder if that actor's actual voice is like Drew's.
I don't know. I think, like, you always... Once you get to know somebody's voice...
Yeah.
Like, you always hear an element of it, even if they're really good. Like, Billy West, I can pick him out pretty reasonably well these days. I don't know the last time I was like, who is that? And then it would turn out to be Billy West.
So, waiter, there's a baby in my soup. It starts with another classic sort of close-up. Like, the last episode was a close-up in the grass of the backyard, like, and it was like a jungle. And this is from inside of the toilet. So we get a recurring role of the character of the Pickle's toilet from the pilot episode.
Tommy is now very acquainted with this toilet.
Yes, at this point, they hang out. One thing I really like about it is that initially there's no music. We just hear Tommy kind of humming. Yeah, like from inside the toilet. Well, Tommy's not inside the toilet, but you know what I mean.
And then you see his face peek up over the toilet as he dips Stu's tie.
His favorite tie. Water.
His favorite tie.
Is there anything else of Stu's favorite in this series? Like, Stu's favorite shirt, his other favorite shirt, are both ruined in the first episode, and his favorite tie in the potty in this episode.
My favorite friend!
Speaking of another Nicktoon. So yeah, Stu catches Tommy this time. You gotta wonder if he would have caught Tommy, if Tommy would have belly flopped, if he wouldn't have had his tie. He would have had to have Grandpa save him.
Stu pays more attention to his valuables than his child.
He's a wacky inventor. He's gotta look good. Although, actually, there's a great line in here where he's trying to, like, fix his tie after Dee Dee's, like, wrung it out and it's, like, popping up. And he's like, I don't want Mr. Mucklehoney to think I'm some kind of wacky inventor. Typically, Tommy's babysitter in a lot of episodes is Grandpa Lou, but he's got a hot date. And Stu wishes him to
score a 300, Tiger.
and Louise, who we hear her mentioned off and on throughout the series, I think, as Lou's Grandpa Lou's girlfriend. She's got this, like, hot rod outside. But anyway, he takes off with her, and it turns out that their babysitter also can't help them because her goldfish died. Her other goldfish.
When I hear this, I can't help but think of, like, The Simpsons, where none of the babysitters are willing to babysit them because they're such a handful. And in this episode, you definitely get the impression that Tommy is, like, the worst baby that ever. He's dropping shit in the toilet. He brings out all the pots and pans on the floor, knocks over the garbage.
Before they even leave the house. Head out the door. And that's something I really, really, really noticed upon rewatching this again is, I don't know why, as a little kid, it didn't make a huge impression on me of him, like, destroying stuff like that. But it's three things in the space of the first couple minutes before they even get to, like, the main location of the episode. Okay, so they're at the restaurant, which is Chez Ennui, which is great. and the waiter's attitude seems like he has a lot of ennui. But anyway, they're sitting at the table and Tommy's drumming on all of the plates and glasses with like a fork and a spoon. And when Dee Dee takes them out of his hand, he actually looks angry.
No, that's so good.
I never noticed that until this rewatch.
He's literally like, you fucking bitch.
Grandpa Lou calls the restaurant and asks for them and says he's got to get out of there because he had an argument over a 7-10 split with Louise. And Dee Dee and Stu initially look at this as an opportunity to get Tommy the hell out of there so he doesn't ruin this important business meeting. And then Mr. Mucklehotty's like, "Oh, shucks, we should leave the little kid here.
We should take this opportunity to just discuss the Mr. Mucklehotty, who is every bit as disgusting as the dog from the previous episode. But he's also large, hideous, and extremely annoying."
I love his character, by the way.
He plays pranks on every single one of the pickles, like within 10 seconds.
Buzzers. He does one of the hand buzzers to Stu. Has a fake hand for Dee Dee. And while carrying a baby. And a fake rubber lollipop for Tommy.
Dee Dee ends up leaving to pick up Grandpa. But they leave Tommy.
I just want to go back to, you said he's every bit as disgusting as the dog. They both have the jowls.
He's so hideous that no matter what frame you freeze it on, he just basically looks the same. There's no funny frames of Mr. Mucklehotty, sadly. He's just hideous and all.
He's got that great, instead of barking like a dog, he just barks like an obnoxious human.
Hey, waiter!
Yeah, the only reason anybody would give this man any time is that he has money.
Yeah, and owns a corporation. I actually find the character, I don't know how likable I find him in person, but as a character, I really, really like Mr. Mucklehotty, and I kind of wish it had been a recurring thing Stu worked. I believe Stu mentions Mr. Mucklehotty in other episodes. Like when he's making the dolls in the basement, he says he's making them for Mr. Mucklehotty, but we never see him again. I would have loved to have seen like Stu go to work there for a day and Tommy like sneaks into his bag or something and is in a toy factory. But I guess when you got one in your basement, you don't have to do that.
Yeah. They could have easily brought him back. He's just Michael Bell series regular. But anyway.
Even the writers were annoyed with him and his desire for pound and a half slabs of prime rib.
He's not impressed with any of the toys that Stu shows him. And while Stu is presenting him all the toys on the table, Tommy slips off and
underneath the table. Doesn't even need a screwdriver.
Yeah, this is the first screwdriver in this episode, I believe. This episode, he's just a dumb baby, though. So yeah, it would not fit for him to have a screwdriver to get out.
Oh, another thing he does at the table is he uncaps salt and spills it.
Yeah. He pulls gum around Mr. Mucklehotty's shoes, and then he ties Stu's shoelaces together.
He's like a brat in this episode.
Yeah, I know. He's the fucking worst kid. Stu probably almost wishes that duck.
Fucking hell. I was just thinking back to the something you mentioned from the pilot where Stu was talking about how smart Tommy is. He's wishing he had the dumb kids, Phil and Lil.
Tommy's almost, he's worse than the dumb baby episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially this one. But you said Mr. Mucklehotty like is unimpressed with everything. There's a couple times there's something he says things like, "That's a great gag." Or like, "Oh, that's not bad, but what does it do now?" And it's it's like a robot that transforms into a car, drives around, and its head flies off like a helicopter. And he's like, "We got two toys like that that go in reverse."
Tommy eventually sneaks off to the kitchen.
Yes.
And the first bit of mischief in there is he takes a little like anchovy off a plate and smells it. Maybe the best freeze frame in the whole series with him sticking his tongue out disgusted. Throws it on top of a
sundae, a parfait, yeah. And then the waiter who has like the 80s new wave hair comes and sees that it's gone and he puts like a piece of parsley. This is like the amuse-bouche.
It's like a couple french fries and a piece of parsley.
And then back at the table, we see things are... Actually, something I want to go back to. When Tommy's under the table, before he uses the gum and ties up Stu's shoes, we see Stu's feet, and they're, like, all sheepishly, like, he's, like, you know what I... Oh, like, yeah. Embarrassed, like, moving around. It's another one of those little touches that I really
yeah.
like.
Yeah. Mr. Muggle Honey's feet look restless, like he's not really engaged in what Stu's showing him.
With his clown socks.
His clown socks.
But anyway, back to the kitchen stuff. I'm just thinking about, have you ever worked in a restaurant before?
No, but I know you have.
Yeah, like I was just a dishwasher like a long, long time ago. But I'm just thinking about how clean we had to keep everything. Even a baby that hasn't shit itself. I'm just thinking about like a dirty baby crawling through everything, like in the mixing bowl, in the dough for like whatever, like crawling through it. It's just the smell of like baby powder, all yeah. these kinds of things.
I like when he's like crawling up to the mixing bowl and it's just his head like waving back and forth. Yeah, and then he like
in the reflection.
Checks out his gums in the reflection. And then he gets in the bowl and turns it on, and for some reason the bowl is spinning.
That's the second mixing bowl we've had in this show. Angelica goes flying in Tommy's first birthday.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They climb on top of a mixer, right?
Yeah. How does Tommy get out of it? He flies out of it and lands in the dough. And yeah, that's where I thought, oh god, a baby in a kitchen is gross.
Yeah, that I definitely wanted to point out how fucking disgusting Tommy has just made all this food, like, inedible. Fucking, he's like had his hands in gum and
yeah. And he's a baby.
Oh, he was just playing in the garbage a couple hours ago.
Yeah, exactly.
How about the pastry chef or whatever he is, like with the wispy mustache,
yeah.
and long line eyebrows. I love that character design.
We see in this episode on two occasions Tommy's cooking skills. First, he helps the pastry chef. He sees that the pastry chef is just making like a boring old like cream pie. So Tommy decides to make his patented and world famous silverware pie.
Yeah. Amateur mistake. He forgot to throw in the silverware.
And silverware pie.
And then he just covers it with whipped cream.
Yeah. And then the new wave waiter comes back and says, Pierre's getting a little sloppy. Like, he takes that one and the other ones are there.
And Tommy has such a self-satisfied look on his face after he sprays the whipped cream all over the pie, all
He's
over
helping.
The silverware.
He's helping.
He's helping.
So then we get the stereotypical French sort of music. We see Pierre making some kind of soup. Maybe it's chili. I don't know. But also, I think this is a mark of the times for what they consider to be extremely spicy. Tommy comes over to the soup, and first he pours a bunch of black pepper and garlic powder into it, and then, like, one tiny dash of hot sauce. Like,
yeah, just... he made some delicious soup.
Yeah, like, he added seasoning to soup. I can imagine that I might actually like that.
Yeah.
But then again, college story for you folks out there, which maybe this is something that will come up. When we were roommates together in college, we would cook with so many spices that we had to open our windows sometimes because our eyes were burning so bad. The ventilation in our apartment was so bad.
It reminds me, sort of related story of when I lived with my next roommate. And I was boiling a pot of water for ramen, and he came in and he started coughing. He's like, oh, it's so spicy. And I'm like, it's just water.
I bet he would be on this show at some point. I think we talked about that.
Yeah, we have to get him on the show. He will not be named until he's on the show.
That no good so-and-so. Oh, another... Let's make fun of him before we get him on the show so that we can build him up. I remember one time when I was visiting you, when I was in grad school, and you and so-and-so were roommates, and he was hungry, and he wanted to make pierogies, and I remember you and I were hanging out in your room, and he comes in and he says, I'll never forget that. Do you think it would be okay if I put these frozen pierogies in the toaster? I I wonder if he's developed any cooking skills since then. I mean, I was bad. I was really bad. But I never thought to put a frozen pierogi in a toaster. Even, like, most unable to cook. And I cook really well now. And I know you cook really well, too. But I would love to know if he has moved beyond wanting to put stuff like that. I don't know. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. Kind of jumping back a little bit.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention how whenever they bring Tommy first into the restaurant and he like waves at that lady.
Yeah.
Just a kind of cute little scene. I like that. So
yeah. Everybody's like smiling because there's a baby in the restaurant.
Just give the shows a little bit of heart and it's easy to forgive a lot of stuff.
Yes. Oh, and also Tommy's clothes.
Oh yeah. Tommy, he's not wearing his blue shirt or the red shirt. He's wearing like a yellow shirt and overalls.
Yeah.
Right?
Like a little. Yep.
Yeah. They weren't afraid to change it up.
We're on the second episode, and what? He's had his blue shirt, orange shirt, his birthday outfit, and then his nice restaurant clothes.
Yeah, this is already four different outfits
in
just technically two, three episodes.
Definitely not something you see in later episodes. Change of wardrobe
for
anyone.
They tend to, you know, save a little money by just keeping everything standard.
Yep, definitely.
And, you know, no anything bad about that is what I'm trying to get.
No, for sure. It's completely under animation, especially traditional animation, is expensive as hell.
Yeah, you can make stuff that's cheap can still be good.
Maybe the reason the reboot of Rugrats is in CG is because it's cheaper than doing traditional animation.
I think so. I think that's a lot of things do CGI these days. And
yeah.
I think initially I thought that that's just what they thought would sell well to children these days, but I figure...
Couldn't they at least cell shade it? Couldn't they at least cell shade the CGI?
I don't know. I just think it's a lot cheaper. Like, I know when Futurama came back after it was canceled, it was technically CGI, and I think it was, like, cell shaded.
Yeah.
The way they did it, maybe it wasn't CGI. Maybe it was just flash animated, and it was just a really good job at it.
Yeah.
But they did have some CGI with the spaceship and everything. But
yeah, the intro too, right?
Yeah, they did a good job with it. I'm not particularly a big fan of the Futurama after they brought it back, but there was more good stuff in that than there is in Rugrats when they bring it back.
It's kind of a thing in recent years, and I mean recent years, maybe like the last decade or two, to revive shows. Was Rugrats the first show that was kind of revived like that? I mean, it was only 3 years later, and they were still doing like one special a year. But what, Family Guy was canceled, came back. Futurama was canceled, came back. A couple other things.
The only thing that I could think of, and I'm not entirely sure of it, might be Columbo, because I know Columbo started in the late 60s, kind of went sporadically through the 70s, and I think they did eventually bring it back in the early 90s with Peter Falk being considered. It's pretty decent. I would recommend it. It's just like it's kind of cool. They kind of, it's not like a whodunit. It's, you know what happens at the start of the episode, and it's basically like a game of cat and mouse. Columbo has to trick the murderers, who usually think they're like the smartest people ever. And Columbo is an absolute slob, and he plays that up. His hair is a mess. He's like wearing a dirty trench coat. He like refers to himself like he's a fucking idiot all the time. His signature move is and one more thing after he's about to leave, and they think they've gotten away with it, and he asks a question that kind of puts them on edge. It's pretty good. I haven't seen all of it. I do enjoy it. I do enjoy what I've seen. Peter Falk's a great guy.
I wonder if Columbo will come up again while we're talking about Rugrats.
Do you know something I don't know?
I actually am curious. That was a genuine question. I know it sounded like I was being like facetious or like setting something up for a future episode, but I actually am curious. Because, I mean, they do have random like references to stuff like that. Yeah. And then even actors like Pat Sajak playing himself. Like
I don't even remember that. So what the...
On Super Stumpers. Oh, yeah, and Alex Trebek plays Alan Quebec. So anyway, Tommy makes silverware pie, makes some soup that would actually probably be delicious.
Yeah, soup that I want.
Yeah, looked like some kind of a spicy chili. Well, maybe spicy for yuppies in 1991. So then Tommy falls into a big bowl of spaghetti, and the new wave waiter brings him back to the table, opens it up to present it, and there's Tommy, and says, and the waiter says,
Is this yours?
Or wait, this is, before that, Mr. Mucklehoney tries the soup, and he's like,
the greatest. That's so funny. And he tries to get up from his table and it fucking flattens him like a pancake.
Tommy!
Tommy!
Stu falls down.
Tommy!
And then Stu is holding Tommy, and the camera pans a little bit, and you see Mr. Mucklehoney laying with his table like up to his neck, and he's just like staring off at his face. But then he starts to laugh as he sees everything, and it occurs to him that maybe Stu set all of this up just to play a prank on Mr. Mucklehoney. And even though this is not true, Mr. Mucklehoney likes Stu, he likes his ideas, and thinks that he went to all this trouble to set it up, and decides to hire him on at Mucklehoney Industries, or at least, I guess, invest in Pickles Toys.
Yeah. It's not really unclear exactly what's going to happen with.
Yeah, yeah.
I like the little gag as they're leaving the restaurant. The valet or whoever has his hand out for a tip, and then Tommy brings out a handful of spaghetti, which I imagine is very cold and wet, and puts it in his hand.
His last brat move of the episode.
But then the waiter kind of smiles as they walk.
But, and then drops it. And I think he smiles, but then looks disgusted. But then, even though I like Mr. Mucklehoney as a character, but he obviously comes across as and is sort of an obnoxious blowhard, but he does make the nice gesture of paying for the entire bill, which I see is $390. Yeah. And in my mind, I'm like, does that seem like enough? And then I guess Tommy didn't really do that much or that many destructive things compared to other episodes.
Here's the question. Do they know how much destruction it actually caused?
Or is that just like the bill at the fancy French restaurant?
Yeah, that's just the bill, and the bill for like cleaning up a knocked over table or something. Yeah, Mr. Mucklehoney, kind of like jerk, an annoying, large asshole, kind of like Bill Strickland in King of the Hill type of character.
That's a good comparison.
I think Bill Strickland probably worse than Mr. Mucklehoney. But.
Yeah, I get the impression that deep down, Mr. Mucklehoney isn't like a bad person or anything. He's just he's Tommy. If Tommy was never disciplined for being a destructive child, there's another parallel that we just discovered. No, there's time travel. That's Tommy from the future.
Before Tommy channels his bravery into like justice and the Tommy we see in later seasons,
he's like a superhero baby.
Yeah, his bravery manifests in this episode as like just a pure destructive force, unafraid of anything.
Yeah.
It's like fucking he just like crawls anywhere, plays with anything, will destroy anything.
So I'm just thinking to myself, in the last episode, he could have been eaten by the giant, disgusting dog who probably belongs to Mr. Mucklehoney, because it looks just like him. And then I was thinking, I don't think there are any points in this episode where he could have died horribly. And then I remembered he's a little baby without all of his motor skills, as he says in a later episode. He could have fallen off that shelf into that boiling soup.
He was spinning around in a fucking mixing bowl. He had gotten shaken baby syndrome.
What are we doing with this podcast? I love this.
Mr. Mucklehoney's fault that that dog wants to eat babies, considering he gives it an all-baby diet.
Is that the continuation of your second special segment?
This has been another segment of Rugrats.
Rugrats. We got to get somebody to design that. Rugrats. Like, they're all little ghostly babies that have, like, the little wisp for the lower body, like Casper.
Yeah, there doesn't have to be any continuity in this. It just has to be, like, poorly pieced together horror based on Rugrats.
Yeah, the
mistakes.
That are just a theory about the way what is, quote-unquote, actually happening.
The true story that they won't tell you because this is a show for babies.
Nickelodeon wouldn't let them show their true vision.
What's Nickelodeon's agenda?
Their liberal agenda trying to hide the Rugrats. They made it into a baby show. It was supposed to be a dark thriller.
This show, originally you had to be 21 to even watch the trailer for it. And if you vomited within the first minute, you were out of there.
And it's like one of those old William Castle films from like the 1950s where like to go see the movie, you had to sign a waiver that says if you die of fright, there's an insurance policy.
The scariest monster of television history.
Mr. Mucklehoney's dog. What did you say?
Tommy Pickles.
Riding Mr. Mucklehoney's dog.
They eventually become friends. Yeah. And they kill.
Once the dog learns to educate Tommy and to use his destructive baby talents for evil.
It's very similar to the plot of Hannibal. The TV series.
I actually haven't watched the series, but I've heard really good things.
That actually brings up something else that I thought that would be a good addition to the show, where we talk about some non-baby related things that we're currently watching or enjoying.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
One of which is the TV series Hannibal. I'm rewatching it this time with my wife, and she's actually thoroughly enjoying it. I was surprised. I didn't think it would be her cup of tea, but she's enjoying it. In addition to that, I am reading Blue Mars, the third book in the Mars trilogy by Kim Stanley Robinson. Nice. Kind of a sci-fi series about like how capitalism fucks everything, but more about like conflicts of interest and whatnot as a group of people terraform Mars or do not terraform Mars, as the case may be.
Nice.
It's a pretty interesting read.
You said it's Blue Mars?
Blue Mars. After the first book, which Red Mars, then Green Mars. Mm. And I'm on the last one, Blue Mars.
I am actually in the process of finishing up rereading a book called Blue Highways. Blue Highways. It's a travel writing book, or a travel book. The author, William Least Heat Moon, back in the 1970s, was an English professor at a university in Missouri, and he was getting divorced, and he lost his job, and he decided to take all the money that he had, invest it into a little van, put a little bed in the back, and just drive around the United States on blue highways, which on old maps were like, you know, if you're driving around sometimes now, like you see old Route 8 or, you know, something like that. And it's not like a 4-lane highway or anything. It's just like a little back road. He decided to like explore that part of the country. And he drove like from Missouri all the way like down to Florida, up through California, like all around to Maine and back to Missouri, just exploring all of these little towns that are on a map with like weird names. Like in Pennsylvania, there's Intercourse, Pennsylvania. And he goes there in the book. It's really, really good. I highly recommend it. Blue Highways by William Least Heat Moon. And actually, as far as watching stuff, I had an idea maybe for a future episode. You're not a Star Wars guy. I'm curious what you would think about The Mandalorian.
Well, if we ever get popular enough for a Patreon,
yeah,
maybe that would be a good jumping off point.
That's a good idea. Hey, anybody out there listening that ask for us by name, say, we'll pay you on Patreon.
Yeah, and you will hear me just get so angry as I watch something Star Wars related, and it'll disappoint Matthew a lot.
So we could do audio commentaries on it. This is all theoretical, obviously, but
yeah,
we'll get there. We'll get there. I believe in this podcast. But no, the reason I think that would be good is obviously you don't like Star Wars, but I think at least to a certain point, there's enough stuff in there that I think someone who doesn't like Star Wars might be interested. But then references from the movies start coming in and it's in like the other shows. And I don't know. I'm just curious, like, what does that mean? What do these things that are bringing tears to the eyes of people who are Star Wars fans mean to someone who doesn't give a shit about it?
That's what you want. You're not trying to groom me into a Star Wars fan.
If you end up liking it, all the better, because it is a great show.
That is kind of a funny concept, watching it from the eyes of somebody that watched the first three Star Wars movies and went, what is this bullshit?
Well, I had an idea for a long time to do a podcast with our friend John. James and I, our other friend James, we had the idea that we'd get him to watch wrestling. Because in my mind, he would hate it. But then actually, Wednesday night, he, in our group chat, he sent a message that he was watching AEW Dynamite because Shaq was wrestling. And he was thoroughly enjoying it. So my dreams of torturing our friend John have been thoroughly thwarted. I think he's now a wrestling fan. But anyway.
You can still torture me.
Yes, I can still torture you with Star Wars. I'll have to complain to Disney, though, because each of the seasons only has 8 episodes, and they're generally only about a half hour. I'll have to yell and say, they need to be longer so I can torture my friend. But yeah, this was a second episode of Rugrats, season 1. Both segments are A+ in my opinion.
Yes, they're different. They're different than a standard Rugrats. They're different from what came before. I'm probably like almost like the conflict of how the show was going to eventually turn out. I know we watched that YouTube documentary where it talked about how Arlene Klasky wanted the babies to act more like babies. And if it had been like dumb Tommy baby acting like baby, I actually would be all for that. I know.
Like,
that,
you mean more episodes like Baby There's a Waiter in My Soup?
Yeah,
like dumb baby episodes?
Yeah, more episodes like Baby There's a Waiter.
Leading to chaos scenes.
Waiter There's a Baby in My Soup, not Baby There's a Waiter in My Soup.
That's another Rugrats episode, the sequel, where Tommy's ghost puts Mr. Mucklehoney in a pie.
I kind of feel like that's not what they meant whenever she wanted the babies to be more baby-like. I really don't know. If it was more like Tommy crawling around getting into trouble, I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, I don't think that's what they meant, though.
Considering how after Paul Germain left the show and then it became kind of dumber and blander.
Yes.
I don't think that's the direction that they were going to go in at all.
Another delineation that I think this is going to be another new term that we add to the show. After the first 3 seasons, I'm going to start calling them the diapy episodes. Because they never said diapy in season 1 through 3, and then that became a thing once it came back.
The diapies.
Yeah.
Make it diaper babies.
I actually love that episode.
But yeah, I think I agree with you, though. Even though I haven't gotten into the later seasons, watching these first season episodes again,
I'm
definitely liking them more. I can't wait till, I think, the next episode we have at the movies and
Slumber that's Party. Both great episodes.
I actually really like Slumber Party and At the Movies.
This is a little preview for next week. Slumber Party, after rewatching it, I now refer to that as Tommy's fever dream. He's just like hallucinating the entire time.
And it could be an alternate origin of the Rugrats theory.
Wait, he's not a stillborn. He dies sick in the night.
He died because Angelica opened a window.
And she feels guilty. So the first 2 episodes and the pilot actually happened, but from Slumber Party on, it's all on Angelica's head.
Slumber Party is actually the last episode of Rugrats, chronologically.
I wonder how many people are like gonna find this podcast and hear the horrible things we say.
About babies.
About animated babies. This is, folks listening out there, this is all a show. We're just having fun. We don't actually want babies to die horribly, or anyone for that matter. Not even Mr. Mucklehoney.
This isn't your grandma's Rugrats podcast, so...
But yeah, two great episodes back-to-back. Very excited for next week for At the Movies and Slumber Party. I think that's about it for this week. What do you think, Adam?
Yeah, I think so. I think we did it. We did the job. We did a better job than last week, and we will continue to improve.
More succinctly, anyway. Or maybe we always talk about the differences between season 3 to season 4. Maybe eventually people will talk about the difference between episode 1 and episode 2. Episode 1 when it was good, and then episode 2 when they came back and it was terrible. It just took 1 episode.
We sold out really fast.
But anyway, with that, thanks to everyone for listening, and we will see you next week. Thanks a lot for listening.
Thank you.
I'm going to leave that
thank
in.
You. Thank you.
Thank you.
Like what you heard? Tune in Sundays at 7 p.m. to all of your favorite podcasting platforms, or go to lostcontrolpod.com for new episodes of Because I've Lost Control of My Life. You can also email us at lostcontrolpod@gmail.com. That's lostcontrolpod@gmail.com.
A baby's gotta do what a baby's gotta do.